everyone. Thanks for joining us on our female gender bias panel discussion. This multilingual event is brought to you by Lionbridge. Lionbridge, helping you connect with your customers. Sorry, I really wanted to sound like a 70s commercial. Thank you for sponsoring this event, Lionbridge. To set the stage for this discussion, I'd like to run a number by you. Did you know that 90% of people have a deeply ingrained bias against women? Jan, I'm going to ask you to paste that first link I sent to you in the chat. This is the finding from a study that the UN did earlier this year, and that's a worldwide number, and it includes women in that 90%. So I'd say we have something to talk about. My brave panelists today are Aki Ito, Jan Hinelix, and Rain Lau. Could you introduce yourselves? Aki, I'll start with you.
Sure. My name is Aki. I'm originally from Japan. I've been in this industry, localization industry, for like 25 years or so. I'm doing localization consulting these days, helping global companies setting up localization operations. Thanks.
How about you, Jan?
So yeah, thanks a lot, Carrie, for having us here today. I'm Jan Hinrichs. I'm CEO and founder of Beluga, a translation company. And I'm also founder of LogLaunch, a global community of people, I mean, many of you might know, who get together and just have an open conversation about any kind of topics. And I'm very happy to be here today with you.
Thank you. How about you, Rain?
Thank you. Thank you, Carrie, for having me. And, you know, I'm very honored to be with this panel today to talk about this topic that I care about. I'm Rain. I'm head of localization operations at TVT Media. I'm also the APAC geo manager of Women in Localization. I previously worked for Deluxe Entertainment, Google, and also Lionbridge. I really care about this topic, and so I'm excited about this conversation today.
Thank you. And I'm Carrie Fisher. I'm a Globalization Services Manager at Subway. In addition to asking questions, I'll answer some of them too. And we have a special guest panelist that I will introduce later. I like to keep people in suspense. It's a good surprise. I'd like to start by saying we're certainly not experts in unconscious bias or female gender bias. I don't believe we have doctorates in the subject. Panelists, you can correct me if I'm wrong. We don't have any training or background or discovering or understanding conscious versus unconscious bias of any kind. I wanted to host this panel on this topic because it's interesting, it's relevant, and I feel with open conversation, it can be explored and perhaps understood a little better. Building awareness makes way for change. However, just building awareness doesn't automatically mean things will change. That takes day-to-day practice in our own lives. But perhaps if we are more intentional with our thoughts and actions around unconscious bias, we can slowly chip away at it. As I've stated, this panel is to delve into the female gender bias with a focus on the localization industry. But we're going to talk about other industries too, and also the educational system, because nobody gets away from this. For the record, it's pure chance that all the panelists are on the LSP side. I asked you to be on the panel because I know enough about you and your personalities, and I thought you would answer and discuss openly, honestly, and provide helpful feedback. Jan, why did you agree to be on my panel?
So because, of course, you paid me for that. No, just kidding. Okay, so this topic is really a tough one. And when we first discussed, you know, why, if this was were something I can contribute to, I thought, you know, I'm father of two kids, so both little ladies, 8 years old. And so in this sense, yeah, I have to have a part in this discussion, of course. Now I'm running a company as well, and we have we're working with freelance translators on the one hand, and we have internal staff. So gender and biases are day to day for me. And I think the main reason why I wanted to be or agreed to be on this panel is to get aware myself, to deep dive into this topic. And this is a great opportunity. And I think this is, so thanks a lot for enabling us to dive into it and to get conscious about it.
Well, thanks for agreeing to be on the panel. I appreciate it. Rain, how about you?
Equality is something that I'm passionate about, and it doesn't limit to gender. I wanted to say I was doing this for my kid, but then, you know, data has shown that it is really 100-year gap. You know, I'm talking about the World Economic Forum 2020 gender gap report, right? So I'm like, are we going to see that? You know, I guess none of us, right? Like, and also, you know, not even our kids. But I guess, you know, I like to think that I'm here to contribute to my effort to continue to raise awareness and propose maybe possible solution, like many of the other brave men and women before us, and make a difference within our power.
Awesome. Thank you. How about you, Aki? Why did you agree to join my panel?
Yes. So, you know, bias is created, you know, based on stereotypes, right? And when I hear those stereotypes that women, you know, receive, I saw some similarities stereotypes for Japanese people. For instance, you know, we are taught to be humble and quiet, be apologetic. You know, you probably hear many Japanese people start saying conversation by saying, "I'm sorry, but," kind of thing. Or, you know, work hard, but, you know, don't do self-praise kind of thing. And we never feel like 100% good. There's always something missing, no confidence in there. All sorts of things that we, you know, Japanese people feel and as a stereotype. I saw some similarities. So I thought maybe there are some hints for women by sharing my own experience of overcoming those stereotypes or bias against me based on those stereotypes against Japanese people.
Wonderful. Wow. Okay. So before we get into the meat of things, I want to define conscious bias versus unconscious bias. We see evidence and acts of conscious bias every day. And I understand what conscious bias is. It's a person with a conscious bias is very clear about feelings and attitudes and related behaviors are conducted with intent. Unfortunately, I automatically think of a white supremacist group, right, who is very intentional and open about their intent. They're against anyone who isn't white. Today, I'd like to address the hidden agenda that really lurks in the backs of our minds without us knowing, the unconscious bias. So I came across a video, which I'm going to ask Jan to put in the chat, that really helped me understand why it exists in the first place. It goes back as far back as our days living in caves. When you met someone new, you had a split second to figure out if they were friend or foe, you know, and unconscious bias, of course, is also based on personal experience. And then, Jan, can you do the other link as well? Someone from, Pia Bresnan, who is in Women in Localization with me, sent this around to all the program directors, and it was really fascinating. It's a social experiment done with people from all over the world. And it just highlighted unconscious bias, especially against females. So the link is going to expire in 6 days. So you better download it but do it on your own time. but to quote the professor in the original video that I just had Jan post the link to, unconscious bias makes us do things that don't align with our value system. And we come up with excuses on why we acted that way, as opposed to recognizing the unconscious bias within us. Basically, well-meaning people don't mean to do it, but we do. Are any of you comfortable reliving an unconscious bias moment?
I'm sure I've done this many times, but it's because it's unconscious. Probably I don't remember many, but I remember this one thing vividly. That was when I was 13 years old. I spent 1 month in San Francisco with my host family. And one day, you know, I asked my host mother, what time are you going to cook? And her reply was, why should I? And of course, I asked that question because my assumption is mother always cook. And it was because how I was raised. You know, in my family, my father never at home. It was always my mother cooking. When I visited my uncles and aunts, it was always my aunt cooking. And I had never seen a man cooking. So that was my assumption and a bias. And that was like a moment hit me. It's like, oh, wow. Yeah, women don't always have to cook, I suppose.
I love it. How about you, Rain?
It was a time when I was on a business trip and a coworker was excited to be sharing picture of his adorable new twin boys. And then, I congratulated him and, and then I thought it was natural that I just wish that his wife was doing well, but then ended up he's actually gay. So I was very embarrassed and obviously, I shouldn't have made assumption.
We all do it. How about you, Jan?
Well, so these biased moments, I try to stay pretty much clean of that, I think. I have not much of these experience in this case because it was, it never struck me in that sense. So I think in this case, I would skip and...
I'll tell you mine.
Yeah.
I hate it. It's embarrassing. But I was, I'm the program director of Global Community for Women in Localization. And our website just launched at the end of September. And I was asked to put together as many pictures of chapters, as possible. So marketing, could upload them to the website ASAP. So I was like, I'm gathering photos and everything else with the Women in Localization chapters. I sent it off and someone said, could you have more diversity in your pictures? These people are all white. So there we go. I mean, it was very recent. So, I was embarrassed. That's not how I was raised. But anyway, we all have them. So, how about a moment in time that you realized female gender bias or male privilege existed? I can't personally recall a specific point in time when I thought, oh yeah, we make 80 cents to every man's dollar. I was wondering if any of you had a moment.
When you are hiring people and then you talk about salary, it is always a moment where you think, where you try to make up your mind, okay, so what is the situation of each person? Who is in charge, who is not in charge, who is more, how's the family situation? Is there dependencies and so on? And I think it's really a tough situation because it is when you are consciously aware that you should be aware of biases, right? But still, it's so easy to fall into, first of all, positioning people, this guy is better for marketing, or this, or sales, let's take an aggressive hunter, right? Let's find a hunter for that. Yeah, why not a female hunter, right? So these kind of things come up, and when you try to build up a human resource approach to that, it really comes down to so many biases that you have to overcome, and then to bring it, to verbalize it, and then to teach the team not to fall into it. So these are things I'm struggling with as well. Because you get sort of paralyzed with, not going too far, not going too high. So it happens to me, and it's unconscious. where you say, okay, is it, you know, this guy has a family and he needs more salary than maybe a female colleague, which has no family or just a partnership, and suddenly you are in this game. So it is happening, and it's happening to me, and it's a struggle.
When I was working for a small transition company, we had this one customer who was not happy with our deliverables. And you know, he came to our office, and our project manager and DTP specialist, both female, had a meeting with a male customer. And he was obviously upset and angry and started yelling at them. And I was able to hear that conversation. I was not in the meeting, but I was able to hear that. So I thought, maybe I need to get involved. So I opened the door, knocked on the door, opened the door and say, hey, can I help you? And all of a sudden, this guy stopped yelling. And I thought, well, this is good that, you know, situation is calmed down. But why, you know, is he not, you know, talking to my team members, female members, just like he was talking to me? I thought it was very awkward. But, you know, that could be seen as like a male privilege, that he was not so aggressive toward me. Mm.
Yeah.
Not a fun situation, though.
No, I can imagine. Rain, do you have any?
Yes. So it was when I was working for Google. You know, I was in Women at Google, and it was the first time I actually was presented with data, you know, of the gender gap. I was surprised. You know, I didn't know. I mean, because I heard about it, but it was like so clearly there was this gap, that there are so many occupations and where women are underutilized, you know, even if they have the needed skills, right? Like, you know, I mean, the point is, you know, if they have needed skills, you know, why are they not actually considered to be a good fit for those positions, right? And so especially, you know, we are now at localization, we have 70% of, you know, women. But then at the same time, we also know that there are, you know, like, you know, men are actually dominating and are overrepresented in the leadership positions too. So, you know, I think back then it was eye-opening to me.
Got it. Yep.
Carrie, just for the sake of fairness, can I add to a few points about gender bias against men? Because I suppose there are, you know, men in the audience too. For instance, the harassment is a big issue in Japan. And when we talk about, you know, men getting sexually harassed, and there are cases like that, it's very difficult to come out. People probably don't even listen to you or believe. Some guys may, you know, react, hey, lucky you, you know, kind of come with that kind of comment.
Right.
So there are some, you know, bias against men also. I just wanted to put that in there. And, you know, for instance, we were raised like, you know, real men don't cry, or men got to be tough. And, you know, yeah, sometimes we have a moment that we want to cry, you know, we need to, you know, talk about this, but we feel like we can't share this with anybody, kind of thing. So.
I think that's really important. Yeah. I'm a single mom raising a boy, and this is the one place that I can actually contribute to his upbringing, you know, and making him aware of all of these things and exactly that. It's okay to cry, you know, you don't have to be a man about it. So thank you. So moving on, as I said, I'm not an expert on this topic, and I had to do a lot of research to understand it better, which meant combing through really interesting dissertations, research papers, and articles. And one question which really hit home the most was, if women become well represented in a profession, does this mean equality has been achieved? And as Rain said, you know, in all of the data that we've seen, the short answer is no. And I do want to focus on a profession outside of our industry for just a moment. A randomized double-blind study was conducted with veterinarians, a profession in which women are well represented and have been for the past 10 years. They found that when managers evaluated an employee, didn't know them, right? Just looking at the exact same achievements, but had different names, Mark versus Elizabeth. The managers were giving a $3,475 higher salary to the male, as well as having the male being seen as more competent, even though they had never met either person. It went on to say that this, it's important to recognize that discrimination can persist, even by those who don't think it's happening. It was a huge paper. I'm only picking out the beginning and the end. And it shouldn't really be an eye-opener to me, and yet I still can't help it. It still is. Do you or maybe your companies have policies implemented, such as like only showing the initials of a person's resume when first evaluating a prospective employee that might help keep unconscious bias to a minimum during the hiring process?
I think, Rain, you have from Google the most experiences in this field?
Yes, of course. You know, there is a lot of policy, but I like to also mention, even, you know, today at TVT Media, I wanted to share a little bit of things that we are doing. You know, like, in my day-to-day now, you know, like at my current job, we haven't been seeing a real bias against women in recruitment. Or maybe because, you know, we haven't been hiring a lot of women, you know, in very high position yet, you know, so that might be it too. But, you know, I think as we have seen, you know, in data and, you know, what, you know, we have been talking about, it's really more about the glass ceiling that women are facing, right, when they are climbing up their career ladder. So what we are doing at TVT Media is that we are trying to make an effort to bring equality to the workplace, right? Like some of the bias, for example, like women taking longer maternity leave, you know, so when they are pregnant, they are not as productive and et cetera, right? So we are trying to make sure that we are bringing equality by offering paid parental leaves to both male and female employees. Because we have recognized the shared responsibility for both of the parents for newborn babies. You know, I think this is some of the efforts we are trying to do. And I believe, you know, like bringing more equality is, you know, could be one of the solution, one of a possible solution to be helping to address some of the bias.
There was this Lock Life event from Javi the other day about the LGBT community. And they were like very much about, you know, not using video as a indicator for, you know, for first impression in order not to get biased. So, and the thing was that just in that moment, we rolled out a video hiring solution. And I was like, oh gosh, so I'm doing it wrong, right? Not to get biased by the first view, because first views are so important to influence us. And immediately, the older we get, immediately we put people into the small cages, right? So, but on the other hand, we had a lot of discussion afterwards. So you can, first of all, you can listen just to, so first watch the, hear the video, and then watch the video, you know, to run against biases. This is one part. And the other part is that we're trying to use AI-driven personality assessment tools out there. So basically, it makes you this culturally fit we were talking about before. So this is something, it helps you to analyze who is a fit for the team. And it's not only gut instinct anymore. Right. So, and I think when we talk about, you know, biases, gut instinct is sort of bias, right? This is like what we have learned to see out there. So these kind of tools help us hopefully to address prejudice and biases up front, because we are looking at people, and we have seen it right now that we have re-rescued people from, you know, not a fit suddenly to be a fit because of this analysis. And so this not a fit was probably based on bias.
From my end, a short answer to your question, Kerry, is no, we don't have a policy. It's because I'm the only employee of my company, Localization Guy. But we do work with contractors. I have a policy of not having full-time employees, but we have about like a 50 consultants working on a daily basis. So I put emphasis on face-to-face meeting when I interview those candidates. So I do know their gender. I may not know their gender orientation, but I could tell male, female kind of thing. But I really try to focus on asking questions related to skills and qualifications, so that it won't, you know, I won't make, you know, a decision based on bias. But I do have a bias. For instance, like project management. When I talk to project candidates for project manager, I have a bias that female do better job on project management. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but from through my experience, female does much better job when it comes to multitasking. And project management is about multitasking. So I need to be careful when I interview candidates for project management. And when I have a candidate for men, for that, I need to be really careful not to put my bias onto that decision.
Yeah. And,
but also when client asks for like a translators and like a test translation, things like that, then yeah, we do hide any identification, gender, age kind of thing, because we don't want them to make decision based on the gender, unless they specifically request for like a female voice talent, something like that.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. That's funny about the project management one, that there's a saying out there that says, you know, if you want to get something done, ask a busy mom. So I understand the bias. So going into the localization industry, in 2017, Common Sense Advisory conducted that survey called Gender and Family in the Language Services Industry. And I'm going to refer to a few data points. So localization is another example of a female-dominated industry, and yet only 25% of women hold upper management positions versus 46% of men. Pay structures for men and women in comparable positions are relatively equal, but women are less likely to reach high-paying positions. The really interesting data point that everyone talks about is this one. Men are more likely to be in executive and managerial positions. They also earn more than women in most of those positions, although women earn more as non-executive senior managers. So that reverse gap at that level may indicate that that's the peak that women, you know, can achieve. They might see pay raises, but they don't progress to the executive suite. So again, we all talk about it amongst ourselves. We see the data in front of us. But what ideas do you have to help women who do want to break that glass ceiling and achieve that goal? And here, I'd like to introduce my secret panelist, Veronique Oskaya, who's the CEO of Argos Multilingual. Surprise. So Veronique, I saw your multilingual panel, and even though you were the host of that panel, Women in Leadership, you were asked a similar question. Can you give us your thoughts?
Good evening. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Carrie, for having me. Actually, the guest was going to be a man. It was going to be Kimon, the founder of Argos. And due to, let's say, extreme lockdown situations across Europe, we did a little switch. So I'm really happy to be here. Let's get to the question then. You know, I think that there's two, three things that are important. First of all, is that you actually help on the first rung of the ladder. So that, you know, if you want a pipeline or a funnel of female leaders, you have to help them get on that ladder first. So I think we'll talk about that probably a bit later about, you know, hiring and so on. I think that's the first thing. The second thing I look at is like awareness, increasing awareness about bias, but also about the possibilities that you have. And events like this panel tonight is a very good example of, you know, discussing the topic, raising that awareness more and more. And I see, you know, we see more and more of that happening, I think, in general, not just in the localization industry, but just across the world. This is finally a topic really where it's more and more light that's shed on.
Yeah.
Another aspect that I think is super important is the mentoring and the sharing of the experience. You know, if you've managed to, you know, get your career to a certain point, and people want to learn, You know, what are the things that you have come across? I mean, we're talking about bias a little before. I'll tell you one I get every single time I say I have three kids. I never got like, how old are they? Really? You have three kids? Like, it's not compatible. And people don't do it on purpose. They just, their eyes pop open and they go, three at a time, or, you know. So that I think that it's so important to mentor, share experience, be willing to be very candid about it, about some of the good things and the bad things you may have learned from. And my last one is, I always encourage young ladies and leaders to be bold. You have to be bold. There is definitely something I've come across, which is a confidence challenge. I think that even data shows that men tend to be more confident. If you ask them how capable they are in their position, they tend to be, I'm fantastic. Women are a little bit more timid about that. And I've seen it time and time again that you have to say, go for it. Give people the opportunity to present in front of a large crowd or take the spotlight in a meeting. I think that's very important to say, you know, be bold. And then you kind of tick that, look, you've done it and you were great. So I think that would be the kind of the four things. Definitely recruitment, the awareness, the empowering, and then also this push to be bold.
I love it. Thank you. Aki, this must resonate for you. You just talked about this of having.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Veronica, hey, nice to see you again.
And, same here, Aki.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. You know, talking about this, you know, be bold, for instance, and I see the exact same thing for, say, Japanese people in general. Like they wouldn't try to become like a panelist like this because they don't feel like their English is 100%. You know, they're good enough, but unless they feel like 100%, they wouldn't try. So what I tell them is you got to have, it's difficult for them to understand. If I say, hey, have a confidence, they won't get it. But I tell them, have this attitude, who cares attitude. You know, you worry about how people react to your comment or how they react. And always when you have that moment, you tell yourself, who cares?
Yes.
Because you keep saying that, then you can become bold or try new things. But let me also share some of the things I think. And this also applies to men and or any kind, any human being, I believe. I think if you want to go up a ladder, I think first you need to know how much you want to achieve. And how much you want to go. And also, you need to kind of understand there's a price for it. And are you ready to pay for the price? And Veronica, you may be able to share this, your experience in order to take the CEO opportunity. What are the, you know, price you paid for? It could be like some of your colleague, good friends in office becomes enemy for you because you have all of a sudden you're their boss, you know, or you may have less family time or, you know, constant scrutiny by industry people, whatever. And all those things, they're the price and you have to be ready for that. So the question really is, do you know how much you want to achieve and are you ready to pay for the price? You know, if you have a commitment, then next step for you is to find the right company that, you know, gives you at least an environment to, you know, give you a chance. Now, if you can't find the company, well, start your own business and become the CEO. That's a possibility. And another thing I would like to point out is when you want to be, let's say, successful or achieve something, hang out with women who have already succeeded and established. Don't hang out with people who haven't gotten there and talking about these are the things we should be doing. Like if you wanna be rich, hang out with rich people. Don't hang out with your friends who want more money because they won't tell you how to become rich. You need to spend time with rich people and learn from how they got to rich. So hang out with the women who have already established, but also, on the other hand, kind of, I think we also have to realize that there are some women, you know, who don't want to be promoted so much. And I think we need to be aware of that because if we say, you know, women need to, you know, get promoted, achieve something, it could put pressure on those people who wants to stay there. Mm. And so I think we need to be aware of that. And also, I hope nobody is at this point, but in the audience, you know, if you are at the point where you feel like a beaten or just absolutely see no hope about this gender bias things, then, you know, don't listen to what I just said. You know, you don't need to do any of these things. Forget about it. What you need is you need to heal first, right? And you need to tell yourself it's okay. You need to tell yourself I don't need to change. It's okay. You know, who I am is just fine. You need to heal first. And then when you are ready, then you might want to, you know, have a friend or family members talking, share your experience. And then maybe when you get ready, start thinking about, okay, how much I want to achieve and, you know, do I have a commitment to that kind of thing? So, and I hope, you know, nobody's there, but in case some of you feel like it, just tell yourself it's okay. You know, you're just fine.
I love it. Self-care. One of my big topics. Love it. Rain or Jan, do you have any thoughts about that glass ceiling?
From my side, you know, we're not so big to have a ceiling already. So I'm rather trying to balance the team because I'm a very I believe that a mixed team of equal diverse personalities, so that means man, woman, young, old, you know, culturally rich, is able to create new stuff. So I'm German, I live here in Spain, you know, my wife is Spaniard. Our kids are Spanish, German, you know, and this mixture makes it interesting. And I think this is something I try as a CEO of the company, I try to achieve as well. So at the end, it's something like self-interest of being diverse, because as we have seen in the news and in business literature, if you have homogenic businesses, their time is short because they do not have this mixture. So in culture, it's the same. So those cultures that have mixed up a lot are usually genetically spoken better off than pure cultures. So, and I think this is a biological thing that if we take it and bring it to the companies, that is always helpful. Now about, you know, about silings opportunities, Naki, I really, and Veronique, I really like your saying, you know, get opportunities, bring opportunities. And I think this is something we all have to do as much as we can, you know, to offer opportunities. If we have the opportunity to offer opportunities to others, you know, then encourage them to jump on that. And my kids, to follow up on Aki's, you know, heal yourself and then know where you want to go. I think I tried to say this not yet analogy I talked about in Lock Life. So whenever you feel like you're not progressing or you fail in something, I try to see it as a not yet effect. So I'm not yet fluent in Japanese, but, you know, I have the rest of my life to be so. So it's a mind shift thing, you know, and if you as a female worker or male worker, you know, you're not yet there where you want to go, if you use this analogy of not yet, your mind shift is you will find a way to get there. And this is something I think it's so important that you're not limiting yourself in your career path, in your personal aspirations. So that's what I try to, you know, get my team to view, you know, that we're not yet there, but, you know, we will be there and we will find a way to get there. So that's, yeah.
I love it. And I take both of that advice to heart. Who cares? And I said that in local life as well. I don't care what people think. It's up to me to make my decisions and control my life. And that's a very liberating thought. And I don't know if a lot of people even have that yet. But Rain, I didn't know if you wanted to close it out with any final thoughts on this one.
Yes, I think, yes, who cares, right? Like, you know, actually, one of my previous manager told me this. She told me that that actually women tend to care too much of, you know, how others see us, right? Like, yeah. You know, the fact is, you know, people are often too busy in their own business. They don't really worry, you know, they don't really care about what you do. And so, you know, so women really should really think about what they want to do. And I also, you know, I can't agree more with, you know, what Aki has said about, you know, if people feel like so depressed, you know, feeling there is no hope, you know, it's, you know, they really need to heal first, you know, because obviously we have seen so many successful women, right? Like Veronica, right? Like, you know, like many other, you know, successful women in the industry, outside of the industry, there must be a way for women to be successful as well. And but something that I also wanted to share is that, you know, there is research showing that women are commonly judged by their behavior more often than men, right? Like, and there has been also study helping women to navigate through gender bias. So I guess, you know, there is a lot of resources that can help women. And there is one actually very good article that I have seen recently on HBR, and that is in the November-December 2020 issue on how to develop your leadership style. It is talking about style, which is not necessarily skills. And, you know, and it is not about personality, but really about the style, which is distinct from personality. So there are behaviors or social markers, you know, that we all use to express ourselves and by which we evaluate others as well. I feel like, you know, I found it very inspiring. I think, you know, I recommend to, you know, my other fellow women colleagues.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's so many resources out there now. It's wonderful. You can just Google it, basically, and find some great resources. Speaking of Harvard Business Review, I read one as well, that bias is almost impossible to eliminate in the workplace, but there are ways to interrupt it. The four hiring criteria that they recommend is, I think some are obvious and some were a little surprising to me, but one, insist on a diverse pool of candidates, of course. Establish objective criteria, define your culture fit, and demand accountability. Yes. Limit referral hiring. That one scared me because the last few jobs I've gotten have been by referral. But and then, of course, structure interviews with skill-based questions. So most of them make sense to me. The referral thing threw me for a loop. Are there any on this list that you agree or disagree with? And if so, why? And do you think there's other actions companies can take to cut down or interrupt the unconscious bias? Anyone can answer.
We have four people, so you may want to
Okay.
name.
On the one comment I would have is that I think the opposite on the referral hiring. Because what we see, it doesn't matter really what gender of the person you're going to hire, because the thing is about the quality of the candidate. And we feel that by referral, if you're already an employee and you like your environment where you're working, if you're recommending somebody, unless they're really not a good friend, you actually want something good for them. So if I look at the history of all the talent that we've brought on board, I can see that a really high percentage comes from referral hiring. And we don't see actually a kind of imbalance in terms of the gender. It's always been about, you know, the best candidates.
Yeah.
And I can see like the, what was the last one? Structure interviews with skill-based questions. I can see that 100%. Now, point number one is like a diverse pool of talents. Maybe we need to define diverse here. Does it mean just to have, you know, like a people in a racial differences in the picture? Is that diverse enough? Or are you talking about like a different talent from different background, different beliefs? I'm saying this because diverse sounds great, But in reality, if you have diverse group of people in the office having different agenda, different priorities, it's got to be a chaos. Mm. And in a workplace, I don't think people wants to have chaos every day. And you need to be able to manage that chaos. And of course, this chaos kind of thing creates new ideas. So it's encouraged also. But I think there's a balance of having somewhat like a steady routine kind of expectation in a workspace, but at the same time, you know, being able to kind of encourage diverse. So I think we need to have the, I haven't read this article, so I might be talking out of context, but I think we need to kind of define diverse. And also the second point of define culture fit, for instance, I don't know if that means, you know, you want to have like a culture, define culture fit and find those people who fit into the culture. If that's the argument, then I might argue back and say, well, that's kind of against diversity. You know, you put some kind of cultural, you know, identify, hey, this is our corporate culture. Are you in or out? You know, that's kind of not diversity. So again, I guess I need to have that clarification of what do they mean by that. And
right.
last point of referral hirings, I'm with Veronique. I have a lot more better success rate with referrals. So I don't know why we need to limit the referral hiring. I don't know.
I don't know. It was just fascinating to me. And that's why, and Harvard Business Review is very respected and, you know, they do a lot of research, and that's why I wanted to put it out there, because I don't agree with that either. So.
I guess, you know, when, yeah, sorry for just jumping in. So I was just thinking, you know, regarding referral hiring, right? I guess the point here is that if everyone could be biased, right? Like, so you probably would recommend people that you think they are good, but there might be other people who are as competent, you know, as good, you know, a fit for your role, but you may not be actually considering them because you're limiting your options, you know, if you are only you're relying on referral. But I agree with what everyone has said. You know, we have got, you know, even in my own experience, there has been a lot of success in referral hiring. But I guess that's the point why we wanted to limit it, or at least not to say limit. Shall we say that we will both, you know, be open to, you know, candidate that wasn't referred by anyone, but also the referral, and you are, you know, giving equal opportunity to both. I guess, you know, that's the point, right? The other thing I also wanted to say is, you know, I actually agree with all the point, but then I would say that number one could, you know, I mean, from my experience, could be the hardest, because we do not always get a very diverse pool of applicants. Like, you know, people who apply to the job, you know, they apply, you know, they are interested in, you know, those roles, right? Like, those may not be actually as diverse as we want it to be.
Now, from what I said before, I think sort of technology-driven analysis adds a lot of, you know, another level to not be biased. And it is a mix. And you have to care a lot of the mix of how you hire. Referral hiring, I think what Rain said before, it is, you know, to avoid that the group gets too homogeneous, because referrals are at the end, you know, somebody who is like you, and it's a buddy of you, and you limit yourself for new ideas. So it's a tough decision, but I think we try to be as open as possible. One limit we see in these, you know, open thing is contracting. Actually, you know, we're living in a global economy, doing work everywhere, especially in our industry. Now it's not so easy to work with somebody outside of the European, well, outside of Spain, then outside of the European Union, and then forget about, you know, somewhere in the world. So it's not just about, you know, the wish to work with a diverse workforce or from people everywhere. Then you have this legal battle to find the right structure, contracts, and give security to the new hire. And so it's all, yes, in theory, that's great. But in practice, I notice it's pretty challenging. And when you want to be on a legal safe side, then you say, okay, just hire somebody from next door, right? Because it's all in your place and it's way easier to handle, especially if your company is not yet so big. Yep. You know, and you do not have the resources.
You know, about the referral hiring, if they mean don't just do referral hiring, I completely agree. But if they, when they say limit, you know, if they mean like a limit to 10% of the candidates coming from referral, I don't see the reason of limiting it for any reason. And reality is, if you get the candidates from like open, you know, source, like in your vendor management or recruiter, find those candidates. When you go through the interview process, you already have bias. You know, people hire people they like, and so I don't think just because it's not referral means, you know, you become somewhat not biased or bring somebody who do not agree with your value. Like if you really want to promote that, I would challenge that you let your colleague just give them job description and let them hire those candidates. You don't get involved because then you have, there is no your bias into this decision making process.
I like it. Data driven stuff, which is my next question, really. The same report, you know, from Harvard Business Review went on to mention that meetings were a problem in terms of what gender spoke more. So women participate in their studies. Women participate 25% less in meetings than men. And they also said there's a free online tool out there that helps companies track who speaks in meetings and for how long. And this seems like another impartial and data-driven way to look at part of the problem that was discussed or described above. Are there other ways or tools you can think of that might help disrupt gender bias or at least bring more awareness to it? Jan, you already mentioned the AI that you employ.
Exactly.
Is there any other thoughts you have or anyone on the panel about this?
Well, I did some research on these tools because of LogLunch. Of course, we have this situation of, you know, large online conferences and everybody talking, and it's a conversation. It's not like here that where we have a moderated, fine-tuned, you know, everybody has a say situation, but 1.5 hours of unstructured conversation. And of course we see this, you know, the who speaks loudest and most, right? And it usually is male. So I was looking up a few of these tools because I wasn't aware of them either. I saw it in our preparation for this chat. And so I found out that there is just one app for iOS, an iPhone solution, which was like hip in 2016. And then it was, you know, not supported anymore. It's still there. I have it. But it was the only one. It's not available for Android, for example. Now, Zoom, okay, so we're all here on Zoom. You know, you go to the App Store, Zoom, and I was actually in contact with Zoom to ask, so what about speaking time? Is there any application that helps us to limit speaking time, or like a red flag, a green flag, you know, your time is off, right? Now you need credit from the other to speak along or something like that, you know, and it's not there. Now, gender bias. So who speaks more, who speaks less? All this would be so powerful if we have it as a tool in our daily conversations. And I think for Zoom, for example, just to have the option as an organization to say, okay, I want to control gender speaking because of this bias that women usually do not speak so much. and say, you know, I'm a little bit laid back. I don't want to be seen as, you know, what, a burster or something like that. So that you get statistics on that. We have statistics everywhere, but not here. Mm. So maybe I would really hope to see more of this integrated in our tools. And I was using this female, male word gender API thing I've posted about. You know, this is just one thing, but if you go out Googling application in this sense, there's really little you can find. So I think, you know, talking is one thing, but actually out there to implement tomorrow in your company or there's nothing.
An opportunity. We have an opportunity, folks, you know, develop this app.
Hello. Absolutely. And for Zoom, for our Zoom calls, for our lock lunch, you know, that would be excellent to, you know, to have sort of control, not to spot that somebody talks less or more, but to be aware of it.
Right. Yep. Anyone else have a comment?
I have a comment which is not related to tools, but to the pay gap. Because data also shows that coming out of university, young men tend to be the ones asking most for a, you know, an increase in the salary or the package that they get compared to women. Women tend to, you know, I think it's like something like 40, nearly 50% of men ask for more on the first job and only 7% in women. And I think as an organization, we have to review that and make sure that there is no pay gap, that for equivalent positions, people have got the same reward, you know, experience, number of years on in the position. I think that's something, maybe not in all countries. I'm a French national. I know this is still a huge problem in France, and something that for same position, they can be up to 30%, you know, pay difference.
In Spain, they, from next year on, we have a law. So it's set by law that each company needs to justify pay differences for the same position. And you can get fines up to, what was it? Some 80 or 90,000 euros.
Wow.
So if you are not able to explain why, you know, your female worker and the male worker on the same position in the same duty have differences, then you better, you know, you better reconsider as soon as possible. I think it will become effective by April this year, next year.
Next year, okay.
Maybe it helps. We will have to have this discussion next year.
Yeah, we'll have you host the panel next year.
Awesome. Hey, my daughter, who is a college student, shared her frustration related to this. So she's, you know, due to COVID, you know, they're all taking classes online.
Yeah.
And she was telling me that usually male students dominate the conversation, questions, and usually, according to her, they are talking about no nonsense. It's just blah, 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 blah. but taking up time. And when she has some ideas and share that, nobody really respond. Mm-hmm. But later, you know, male students kind of repeat the same kind of thing. And then everybody reacts to that. And she said, you know, she shared her frustration about that. Now, about this, you know, management and a meeting, I'm more like an analog kind of guy. So I want to put one thing. I think a meeting leader or the manager can play a significant role here. So at the beginning of the meeting host will set the tone. He say, hey, if I feel like somebody is taking over conversation or speaking too much, I might interrupt you guys. I might stop you guys. And I might ask others to, you know, talk. This is the expectation, and we're going to start the meeting. And when that happens, you know, the host can say, hey, thanks for that, but, you know, I want to hear from somebody else. you know, managing that conversation. You know, this is very analog, no tool, no no data, but I think it works really well. And this is one of the areas where I see big similarities between female in general and Japanese in general. You know, Japanese people usually don't speak up in the meeting. So you kind of have to encourage them and give them opportunity to ask questions like, what do you think?
Yeah, great. We're actually at the top of the hour, I just realized. And we wanted to leave 30 minutes for questions. And since I'm on my phone because I couldn't get Zoom to work on my computer, I'm hoping that one of the panelists, can you look at the Q&A? Is there any questions that are...
Yes, sure. There's one question coming in. So we have two questions right now. So let me start with the one from Karen Redift. So any suggestion on how to raise our girls to break the stereotypes and the boys too? What are your thoughts?
Oh boy, do I have thoughts. No. And I'll tell you about a really interesting thing that happened recently with my son. So, you know, I've been around for a while. I'm 52. I've seen all kinds of things. Anyway, there was this post, social media maven, I forgot her name. And she puts together this video of all these women, and it was about feminism. And it was these young women's experiences, actually women of all ages, experiencing male privilege and you know, sexual harassment and all these things. And the females were really fighting back hard and saying, you need to, you know, it was very emotional. It was very kind of rough. And my son got really upset because he said, is this feminism? And I said, well, it is for these ladies. This is an important thing for them. And he said, I don't act like that. This video is wrong. You know, and he actually, we sat down and talked for about an hour and a half about this. And I think it's because I've raised my son as an enlightened male, if you know what I mean, men and women are equal, this, that, and the other thing. He doesn't see this as, he doesn't understand it. And we even talked about it last night because I told him I'm doing a panel, be quiet, go to, you know, don't get up, stay asleep. And I told him about the panel. He's like, wow, this is really interesting. It's fascinating. I think you're right. Depending on how you raise your kids, this brings awareness to it. And it may or may not be an issue going forward. I don't really know, but I can only say from personal experience of how I'm raising my son. And I was really interested, and we actually kind of cried when we realized the other person's opinion, and he didn't understand feminism as being this video. And anyway, that was my experience. It makes an impact how you treat your children as they grow up. So that I'll stop speaking.
I have three girls. Here you go. So, two things. One is like what we did, you know, and they're still growing and they're still some of which was really about the confidence. My husband and I, we said, you know what? Really, we know that, you know, generally that's something that you see in adult women, maybe in the workplace, a bit less confidence than men. So we said, what do we do about that? And from the very young age, we encouraged them to be bold, so far as to have one roller skate in a supermarket and things like this, to really actually get up in the middle of a restaurant where everybody is sitting and dining and dance, stuff like this. And they did it. At the beginning, they were a little bit nervous. And now I tell you, I've seen, you know, one of them is in high school. The level of confidence is there. And also the shift in her brain that she can do anything. And I think that's really helping that. That really made a difference and still making a difference. And the second one, so to your point, Carrie, about music videos. I had my little one asking me the other day, why are women not wearing clothes in, you know, rap videos and, you know, pop music? They said, why don't the boys do the same? Why is it that it's the girl who take their clothes off? And I was like, I was hard pushed to give her an answer. And I was saying, yeah, because she said, why is it selling more music if they take their clothes off? And yeah, that kind of brings it home, right? That was a very interesting comment from, you know, a 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
But we raised three kids, two girls and one boy. And what I recommend is start when they're younger, like up to like a 3 years old. If you wait until like they get teenage, they already have certain bias established. And the way we did was use any everyday life situation as an opportunity to talk about. So when they see, let's say, mom cooking, then I might ask, why mommy is cooking? And is that something you think I can do or you can? What do you think? Usually I get, anybody can. Well, then shall I do it tomorrow? Yeah, you should. Or and it could be any situation. You might see, people at like a restaurant or something, and you might see male chef more than female chef. Then you might ask, why do you think that is happening? And can female be main chef? Yes, okay, that's great. So use that like everyday situation, ask them question, what do you think? And then I think you promote that and do it enough until like 3 years old, then I think you will do a good job raising a children with less bias towards gender, and less gender bias.
Great idea.
I try to be as good as a role model as possible, cooking. So, or cleaning, vacuum or whatever. Stereotypes is it when something happens again and again in the same role. Mm. Now, if you do not agree with these role model stereotypes, break them, but you teach your children by showing them what you feel correct, what is correct, and what is not. So if we are all aware that there is a huge gap between female salaries and male salaries or opportunities, try to be a spearhead for something like that. Today we are all here because we want to raise awareness of a topic. And I told my kids, my two daughters as well, I will be on this panel to talk about that. And this is an opportunity for me to learn much more about it. And at the same time, maybe a grain of sand we add to changing things. And hopefully rain, it's not about 100 years. That is so shocking. I think this is just if we stay the same progress. So it's now for us to make it exponential and to not go this way, but maybe this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, demonstration, yeah, I think, is very important, and very good point, because kids are really paying attention to what you are doing. You might tell one thing, but if you don't do it that way, then they follow what you do. So if you want to teach, for instance, girls to be more, confident and bold, then you have to show that. You have to act that because they are watching how you are, behaving, and they follow your behavior.
And I agree with what everyone have said. And also, in my case, I have a boy, 5 years old. And what I try to do is I let him be himself and, for him to make his own choices. For example, his favorite color, currently has been pink, red, and rainbow. So, I wouldn't limit him to, the choices of, the blue, the green, the boy colors. And also, when he decides that he wanted to do something, for example, he likes to dance, I let him dance. I'm not saying, oh, you have to go to, a martial arts, like that kind of classes, right? Like I let him make his choices, and so that he can be himself, and not that he become like the boy kind of like stereotype kind of person. So I'm still learning too, because obviously I'm not an expert.
We're all learning. I know. I was the same thing happened. Thank God my son is asleep because, you know, he, as a kid, I told you, Rain, he loved high heels. So we called him the clip clop shoes. And I bought high heeled shoes for him when he was 3 and 4 because and they were pink, you know, and that's great. You know, it's whatever, you know, you let the kid, you know, kind of decide what's appropriate and what's not, and to not react and go, you need cowboy boots. You don't need high heels. But I love that. I love all the advice and thoughts from the panelists. Thank you.
Yeah.
How about
We have two questions here, and I'm struggling with the first question to get to the point from Camicia. Maybe you can reframe in the chat. So let me first get to the next one. Language reflects and also influences how we think. What do you think localization companies can, should do to combat gender bias in language?
I don't have a quick answer for that. Somebody else?
I don't either. It's funny because the Women in Localization, the Silicon Valley and the Pacific Northwest chapters combined their joint effort, and they did a panel last week about language inclusivity, diversity, and how it affects translation and address it, you know, in the localization industry. And it was a really fascinating panel. And I'm very embarrassed to say that the recording didn't work. So I can't even show it to everybody on Global Community. But anyway, it's so vast. And we had so many comments. And, you know, I think one of them was in Finland, they've come up with a gender neutral pronoun. And wouldn't that be interesting, you know, to go across all the different languages? But I don't know if any of you have any other thoughts on that.
Well, in the French language, in the last, I'd say 20 years or so, we started changing. So a lot of profession would be male. So we have, you know, the un is male and une is female, right? And mm-hmm. you would be, like, let's say if you're a writer, that's the beauty of English. You're a writer, you can be a female writer or a male writer. You don't know, right? But in French, it would be un auteur. And that's it. You would not have the female equivalent. And that has started to change. I mean, what is then is the application of this, right? If you wanted to really take, you need really people to start using it. And you're starting to see now that even on television, for example, the presenters, they are following the rules and actually applying these new terms to actually reflect the gender of the person they're talking about. And I think this is positive because it's saying, you know, a writer, it can be anybody. And same thing, a lot of professions like this that were all male. And now it is a female equivalent in the language.
Right. Directeur versus directrice, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And already French was not an easy language. We just make it a little complicated, but it's good anyway.
Yeah. So, Carrie, the video, I don't want to spoil, but, you know, the boss, right? Or the
yes.
CEO, okay? It depends all on language. This is not working outside of the American language, because in American language, you know, there's, so I don't want to get to have a spoiler here for the video, but this is the typical use which different cultures act differently on these topics. In general, there's a lot of translators writing now about inclusive writing on LinkedIn, and lots of copywriters, you know, how to be more inclusive and female driven. In Germany, as far as I know, it's by law. So you need to distinguish whenever you talk about, you know, Geschäftsführer and Geschäftsführerin, you need to put both on there because we do not have one single word for them. So now this means that things are getting like huge, and sometimes, you know, it's like it feels a little bit overstretched for me. So I tend to try to think that most things sometimes they are just normal, and we need to watch out where they are not okay anymore. right? Mm. But, you know, policies in this direction can really create like a whole confusing thing and make things really tough. And sometimes it's just not, you know, not that relevant. But of course, otherwise you can't change certain behaviors as well. I don't know. It's a topic I see from like from my point of view, I wouldn't bother. But of course, in Spanish, it's always male, right? Plural form, like in French, it's always male. Now, you can use the at sign to say amigos, right? Amigos with substituting the O with the at sign so that you use both. But that's not the way you can write a resume, for example. Mm. Tough call. No advice there.
We have a ways to go, I think is what you're saying.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't have a specific answer to the question of, you know, what like a translation companies can do to, you know, counter gender bias in languages. But I think we can still, you know, promote, you know, keep having like a discussions like this. Maybe somebody can, you know, make a report on how gender bias is happening in other culture regions and different languages. Those will help, you know, developing awareness. I just wanted to share some of the things about Japanese language. Japanese is very contextual, and there are certain ways, like ending of the sentence, you can tell this is, you know, said by female or male. Certain words only men use, certain words only female use. So, for instance, in when you read an English novel, and there's like a conversation, there's always something at the end, he said, she said, who said, because you have to identify that, because all the subject is I. Mm. When you read a Japanese novel, there's usually no subject and there's no need for identifying who said it, because the way the sentence is ended or structured, you can tell this person is female talking to male, or this person is female talking to other female, who is older, younger, all those contexts you can pick up by just listening to the conversation. So it's very, you know, like I said, contextual, and you can also immediately pick men and female. Well, I'll give you one interesting example. You could probably laugh. My wife is American. And, you know, she speaks Japanese too. She has a host family in Japan. When we visited her host family in Japan together, first thing she said was, "Okaasan, mother, okaasan, harahetta." Now, harahetta means I'm hungry, but that's the only, like, men use kind of word. In a regular sentence, you might say, "Onaka suita." Now, that's I'm hungry. Now, the host mother looked at me and said, "What kind of Japanese are you teaching her?" She got so upset because she was using a guy's word. And so I said, no, you don't understand. I don't teach her. This is how I say when I come home, right? And then she picked that up. So the host mother was so upset. Said, don't teach her, you know, words like this. So,
Gary, if you allow me, I had this post where I said, you know, I will reveal my gender bias in LinkedIn. Okay. So I did this study. I downloaded my whole 6,000 plus network and ran it against gender API, right? So, and it turns out that 41% of my network is female and 61% is male. Now, if I look at Loch Lunch ambassadors, we have so active personalities driving community. We have more female, 55% female ambassadors for Loch Lunch to 45% male. So it seems that, you know, the driving force of communities are still women, you know, at least in this sense. Now, however, LinkedIn, at least for my little representation, it's a male-dominated network still, at least in my sense. So it could mean, and then I tried to figure out, I did another search to see, you know, how many people do we have in our industry with the title of director? Okay, so, and I found 171 people in my closer network, and there we have 63% male and 36% female. So we're still, you know, and this was just, you know, we have the CSA figures and data. This is like just a view into my network, but I think it shows a little bit, you know, what we see. So right now I see women are catching up. They are more active in social media and promoting communities, spreading information, trying to help each other. Women in localization is such a big and huge organization, and you know, shows how well organized and how well knowledge sharing can go, that it attracts like huge amount of space out there. So that's great. LogLaunch Ambassador is the same, but however, we still see like women less active maybe on in general. And this is something like what Rain mentioned before. We see lots of people on the ground, but then moving upwards, it getting thinner and fewer.
That's interesting. The Yon data. Yeah. We should all do that. That's really interesting. Yeah. And you did post about that. I saw that.
Yeah. I promised I would only reveal data here in this talk.
Yeah. So, cause you're already getting a lot of comments, I noticed. Well, this could be a man's way. This could be a women's name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then people say, okay, so female and male gender. Okay. You know, just female and male. And then we open the discussion in orientation, gender That's orientation. Right. And so what happens to all these 20 plus other orientations, which is not just male and just female.
Right.
Yeah. I think a very interesting discussion. And when we talk about bias and we go away from female bias to, you know, open up to all these different aspects. So what we're talking about, you know, it's hard to grasp sometimes.
It is.
But it's great to talk about it.
So when we talk about like a gender bias also, like we're mainly talking about, you know, men and female, but you know, like I know female has certain bias against other female, and men also, you know, among men, for instance, I'm a Asian man living in the US now, which is different from like, you know, white men living in the US. Like you picture yourself and like a picture of this, you know, CEOs in the US, who would you picture? No, you probably pictured, you know, white men. Who would picture, if you say very athletic person, you might have pictured a black person. You know, and you know, we're men, same men, but within this, you know, men, we also have this, you know, bias towards the background or racial background or cultural background. Like a leadership, for instance, you might see if you have a comparison between tall white men and a good looking and you know, short, not so good looking Asian men, you know, which would you see as a company leader? You know, there's a bias for that, right? So it's a lot of, you know, bias. It's not just in a man and a woman, you know, within the man or within the woman. You know, there are lots of biases out there, I suppose.
Very true. Yes. So we only have 3 minutes left. Is there another question, Jan? Or?
I would say the one from Camicia was about gender bias in hiring. And, you know, what's a typical candidate of color, what can they do to enter in the job force? For a young person, I think what you said before, being bold is very important. And not to limit yourself, not to believe, okay, I'm this or that, I'm tall, I'm nice, I'm not nice. You know, start with yourself, like yourself, what you're doing, and believe in that you can, you know, you can change a lot. And there's a long way to go. And then, you know, you will show others that you are confident about yourself. And then you will get promoted and probably you reach your goals as you go.
I talk with lots of students about this topic, you know, how to get a job. And a lot of times I notice that they are the ones who are putting brakes in themselves in terms of potential. They think, for instance, we're not good enough because we're just getting out of college. There are so many more experienced people out there. So first thing I think we need to do is remove the brake that put on ourselves. And if you can do that, I think opportunity will open up at least a little bit. So I think that's the first step you need to do.
Yeah, I just had a comment. As companies, what we can do is actually encourage interns, encourage people to do job experience when they're just fresh out of college. Or even I've had young people of 16, 17 doing this job experience as part of their curriculum, you know, going just before university. And I think that also gives them that helps them to define the avenue that they want to follow, because maybe they have a certain idea also of the corporate life. And when they get there, they realize maybe that's for me, maybe that's not for me. So I think that we can also play a role like this in opening doors and welcoming young people. And again, it's about giving opportunities.
Yeah. And seizing them. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think self-critical when it comes to, like, you know, when you look at my skill set, experience and all that, you know, self-critical than how people actually see you. So stop over-criticizing yourself and tell yourself, you know, I'm going to let them decide if I'm a good fit or not. You know, I'm just going to present myself and go for it. You know, if they don't like it, hey, that's their loss. So
that's right. That's, again, not caring what others think, just matters what you think of yourself. Yeah. So I'm going to stop us there. It's been an hour and a half of really interesting discussion. I loved hearing all of your perspectives. Thank you, Multilingual, for letting me do this. You offered me a panel of the topic of my choice and panelists of my choice, and I couldn't be happier. And thank you, Lionbridge, for sponsoring. And most of all, thank you, Rain, Aki, Jan, Veronique. Merci. I really appreciate it, and I really liked hearing from all of you. So thank you.
Thanks, Sarah, for inviting.
Always a pleasure. Thanks. Nice meeting you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Take care, everyone.